from the Carter Subaru Studios. This is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Voitin.
It is Fresh Fridays. Happy Friday to all of you, your family, and loved ones. It's the G and Ursula Show. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. Happy Friday. It is a Fresh Friday. I understand that the weather is supposed to get better, so I know it was just a whole bunch of bad news about how you can't drive just about anywhere. Mm-hmm.
I feel very sad and guilty now.
Why?
My son told me once when I said, oh, it was a tough day at work. He says, Mom, it's your job. You are literally the bearer of bad news, Mom.
But we're today? Thanks, son. At least he listens. We're trying to focus on some of the positive, too. So we're just going to sprinkle that throughout the rest of our show today. But, gee, we wanted to talk, as we always do, we want to talk to experts. And as you know, one of the most frustrating things right now is the discussions about COVID and children. And it's also one of the questions that I get most from listeners, and those are the things that keep me up at night. So this coming interview that we're going to do, and we will be doing agree to disagree a little bit later, but this interview that we're going to do is really in honor of the parent who mentioned to me that she's going to be listening to us because she has a 6-month-old and she's worried. And as always, I say, talk to your healthcare professional and your practitioner first. But we are seeing a record high right now for weekly cases of COVID, and children represent about 18% of those cases. That's according to Johns Hopkins University. More kids are being hospitalized with coronavirus than ever because of the Omicron variant. And yet there is so much confusing information about how children are affected, not just by the virus, but also the vaccine. So we've invited Dr. Michelle Terry to join us now. She is a pediatrician and the president of King County Medical Society. Good morning, Dr. Terry.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on your show. Really appreciate you.
Thank you for joining us. And I know you and so many others are so busy right now. We hear from all of you. Let's just start with what you are seeing here locally and what you are hearing as president of King County Medical Society, which covers many fields. But specifically when it comes to kids and COVID, what are we seeing in our hospitals today?
Well, all of our hospitals in Washington are quite full with patients right now because of the surge of the Omicron virus. The Washington State Medical Association sent out an urgent letter to Governor Jay Inslee and Secretary of Health Dr. Shaw asking the two to formally declare a statewide crisis to address the overload in the hospitals. And that's all of the hospitals in our state. And so that certainly includes Seattle Children's as well. Many hospitals have asked their surgeons and proceduralists to cancel non-urgent procedures so they can accommodate the influx of very sick patients.
And that's happening at the children's hospitals as well?
It's happening, yes, at all of the hospitals in our state.
Doctor, I'm going to say something to you, and I want you to respond. If you hear someone say that vaccines are more dangerous for kids than COVID itself, your response to that is?
I would say that vaccines are one of the best innovations that we have to prevent disease and disability. For many, many, years, before I was born, children were being vaccinated against diseases for which there were limited treatments and no cures. So, many diseases we don't see anymore, like polio or pertussis or measles or mumps in great numbers because of the success of vaccines. I know there is some hesitancy regarding the COVID vaccine because it's new. It's relatively new. It came on approval in late December of 2020. However, now that about 64% of the U.S. population has been vaccinated, there have not been significant sequelae for those who have been vaccinated. So I understand hesitancy in not knowing what the long-term effects of these vaccines may be. However, in the year plus that they've been available, they've been quite successful in keeping people out of the hospital.
And that's another thing, because as we hear more, even in those who are vaccinated are getting the virus anyway, whether you would still be recommending for kids who are eligible to get the vaccine, if you are still recommending that as a pediatrician?
Yeah, for a couple of reasons. One, you know, if, you know, no vaccine is 100%. However, the data is showing that people who are fully vaccinated and boosters who tend to get a breakthrough COVID illness are not as sick as those who are not vaccinated. So I think that's significant. And then two, you know, children live with their parents and their grandparents and their aunts and their uncles. And in, you know, they go to school and they go to, you know, church and they go to community centers and shopping areas. And so they are exposed to people who may be more susceptible to serious illness. So the theory of vaccination is that if we, you know, are all vaccinated at a higher percentage, there's less of a reservoir for the disease, and a child is less likely to perhaps inadvertently, unintentionally, you know, beyond their control, transmit a virus that is a mild illness in them to illness that could be life-threatening for an immunosuppressed or elderly person.
Right now, Doctor, one of our coworkers happens to be dealing with COVID in within the family. And what message do you have to say to those that have smaller kids, like those under 5 years old, newborn babies, and that can't technically get the vaccine? What advice do you have for those parents out there with little babies out here as it, when it comes to COVID?
Well, first of all, for the parents, you know, as their protectors, I recommend that, you know, everyone who is eligible to get vaccinated, please get vaccinated. You know, the other things that we've been doing since the beginning of the pandemic also helps, wearing masks and using good hand hygiene. And then, like the slogan says, stay home and stay healthy. I certainly wouldn't, you know, take a young child out in the community unless it's absolutely necessary. And then if it is necessary for childcare purposes, then the various childcare providers should have a published list of protocols to keep the staff and the children safe and healthy from the virus.
Dr. Terry, this is going to sound like a question from left field, but I need to ask it because so often those of us who are in the media and who are supportive of vaccines are accused of not giving all the details when it comes to kids who are dying from the vaccine. Have you, as a pediatrician and as someone who is very connected in the medical society, have you heard of any big numbers of kids being seriously injured or dying from this particular vaccine?
I certainly have not. I've heard of no children who have been seriously ill or died from the vaccine. I think the numbers that are published regarding children 0 to 17 who have died from the COVID infection is around 1,000 to date since the beginning of the pandemic. However, I have had over the, you know, last half a year or so that the vaccine has been available for persons under 18, I've heard of no serious side effects from the Pfizer vaccine, which is the one that is approved for children in the United States.
Dr. Michelle Terry, pediatrician and president of King County Medical Society, we thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
You know what stood out to me before we get to agree to disagree, Ursula?
What's that?
What stood out to me is that when we bring on professionals to discuss and talk about COVID, these are professionals that are here in this area, that are local in this area. But for some reason, you know, there's a lot of people who believe that you and I sometimes we fearmonger and that we're not telling the truth. But for some reason, we don't hear any local doctors get on the air here locally and disagree with these doctors that come on our show. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense what I'm saying? Like, there's nobody here locally that will come out in some of these hospitals and say the other way, to say that COVID is not a big deal, or to say things like the vaccine is more dangerous for the children than COVID is.
Right. And I want to assure everybody, too, I reached out to Dr. Michelle Terry. I didn't tell her other than we want to talk about kids, vaccine, and the you know, what you're seeing as a pediatrician and being so connected within the community. I didn't ask her, hey, how do you feel about this? What do you think about this? That this is what we're, you know, I just threw it out there. So, you know, what you heard is what she's seeing. And yeah, and what she knows, and you can look up her credentials. She is well versed in what she says and what she does. Okay, let's do it. Agree to disagree.
Johnny Tsunami, let's get it.
One of these days, we just got to take off the gloves. Just really go at it.
A proposed Florida bill is trying to allow cameras in school classrooms and microphones on teachers. Recordings would be stored for a required period of time should a parent or student have a complaint. Now, is this a good idea for safety and accountability, or another attempt to stop teachers from teaching views politicized groups don't agree with? Ursula.
I'm going to just keep it short and simple. We have a hard enough time trying to get every police officer to wear a camera, and now we want to get teachers to wear cameras. I say we, again, address the problem. Make it clear what our expectations are. What are the rules? What are the policies? Follow up. Hold them accountable. But now to add, have them wear a microphone? Like, who is going to be monitoring that as well? No. No. I'm against it.
Do you know how hard it is for even for some of these unions to agree to have police officers wear these cameras? Now we're going to talk about teachers? That's just, it's just not good. I don't see that happening. And especially the reasons as to why you want these teachers to bring that up. I tell you what, you know, when they didn't want teachers having cameras back in the day when some of the other history that they wanted taught in the classrooms, like Christopher Columbus discovered America, those types of things. So I'm with you, Ursula. Oh, keep it simple. I don't think it's going to happen, and I don't want it to happen. That was a low bill. Some of that.
More and more ways to pay these days with our smartphones and the apps have left the concept of small value coins weighing our pockets down to seem a little old-fashioned. Mm. Canada's already scrapped the penny, and critics say the penny and the nickel cost the U.S. government more to mint than they're worth. Would you be in favor of scrapping small coins? And when's the last time you paid for anything with coins, G?
Yes, scrap the nickel, scrap the penny. It makes no sense. Ooh, I didn't even think about that one. Gone are the days where you reach down into your purse and let me get some change. By the way, my grandmama kept change. I don't know how she kept change. And she kept the cash in her bosom and the change in the purse. But anyway, I don't know how she used to do that. Get rid of the change. Now, I'm trying to talk as long as I can. And here's why. Because Ursula is going to disagree with me. Yep. She wants to keep paying with pennies. And she's going to tell us a story about how she was in the store the other day. And the total came out to be $5.33. And she actually had a $5 bill and 33 cents. That's a made up story. But go ahead, Ursula. Prove your case.
I basically would have given you a story just exactly like that, but but a different amount. No, don't get rid of the penny and the nickel and the dime and the quarter. Although I always wish that the dime would be bigger. What are you going to do then? I am still that person who will put coins in the parking meters when they allow. I just don't like sticking my credit card in those things. I just rather use bills or coins. Coins. Get rid of the coins. And by the way, if you say this is $12.99 or this is $13, what are you going to buy? You're going to buy the one that says $12.99 because you're right. So you're going to always need change.
I know. I have an idea on how we can settle this. We're going to settle this by asking Gen Z. Nick, your thoughts on coins.
I have this jar at my house that my mom got this for me like years ago for Christmas present. It's like the one of those things you get at like Radio Shack or something. Counts the coins in there. Makes it a little more fun. But I got to tell you, I don't really use it that much. I have to say pennies, first of all. Pretty obsolete. I don't use them ever really. Dimes, quarters, maybe. If you're going to get maybe a piece of gum or something like that. But who's doing that these days? You go to the grocery store, you get a pack of that. So coins, I rarely use them.
That was Nick. sixth nice way of saying, Ursula, you lose.
Maybe in a collection state of mind. I do have like a book that my grandpa gave me of coins. But
Here's another question. As long as we're talking about that, when you're at the grocery store or anywhere else and they say, you want to just round it up to blah, 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 do you do that? Or do you just, when the coins come down the little chute, do you just grab the coins and then throw it in the bucket?
I round it up because I know if somebody coming behind me won't, you know what I mean? I always round up. Yes.
Wow.
Do you round up?
No, not always. I have charities
Ursula
that I believe
selfish.
In. No,
Ursula is selfish. Ursula is selfish.
Yeah, you know what? Instead of 26 cents, or I actually donate and give to charities that I believe in, that I know the money's going to go to them and it's going to be spent well. Mm. I have no idea where that money's really going to go and how much it's going to. No.
You want to hear
what you know? You know what I sometimes say? This is terrible. And
what?
But I always just joke around, you know, if it's a cashier I know, I say, no, but I would be happy to help support this grocery store if they want to donate. If they want, if they want to take some money off my bill, I'll happily support it going to one of those charities.
Here's what I'll say about coins. Let's keep it a buck. No pun intended.
Officer Rob Ursula, he says, get rid of the small change, but like the Seahawks say, get the quarterback.
The quarters are still absolutely. They still have value.
Hannah Scott is joining us, and there was a big tease this morning. What was that about? I don't even know what it was about.
It is breaking news, and it is so secret that she wouldn't even tell me. So we're going to hear it all together, all at once. It's going to be a G and Ursula Show breaking news exclusive with Hannah Scott coming up after Heather's newscast. Yes.
Breaking news.
And we do have some breaking news, and we're going to bring Cairo News Radio's Hannah Scott right on to our show to tell us what it is. Hannah.
Yes, that is right, Ursula. We have breaking news that is coming out of our King County Prosecutor's Office, and it is that our prosecutor is making a big announcement this morning. I'll share that with you.
After 37 years in the office and 15 years as the elected prosecutor, I have decided that 2022 will be my last year here, and I will not be seeking re-election. It's been a tremendous honor and privilege to be part of this office. The work we do here is so important, and I'll miss it, but it's time for me to do other things with my life, and it's time for somebody new to step up and lead this office. So it's going to be an exciting and eventful year for us here in the King County Prosecutor's Office.
And that's for sure. He made clear there was a lot of things that need to happen in the next 350 plus days, including, you know, addressing the 250 backlogged murder cases that need to go to trial. One of those cases is the first murder case against a police officer from this state, Auburn officer Jeff Nelson, that was charged after I-940 passed. So a lot of big lifts. He's also got new diversion programs and things that he will be launching. As far as what he thinks will come next.
You know, when I am finished being the prosecuting attorney, there's a lot of other things that I am interested in. And for me, foundational justice issues like hunger and housing and health, those are how we define whether we truly have social justice in King County. So I'll always be interested in helping to reduce the suffering and increase the peace and the justice out there. And I'll look for ways to do that. But, you know, I've been here a long time. I've seen a lot of changes. I've made some of those changes myself. I'm confident that I'm leaving this a better office than when I arrived in 1985, and different. And, you know, it's time for me to move on. I'm very excited about what lies ahead, but I'm also very serious about the next year. We have a lot of work to do here.
I asked him what he thought about who his successor should be, and he said, really, there's just a couple of criteria for him. He wants to make sure it's somebody who doesn't want to dismantle the office and all of the things that they've accomplished over the last almost 16 years.
Well, Hannah, thank you for bringing that breaking news. And again, King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg says this is going to be his final year as the prosecutor of King County, and he is not going to be running for that office again, which he has had for 15 years. Okay, first of all, G, I want you to react to that news.
I'm shocked to hear that news. And when I hear it, I think about the evolution of Dan Satterberg. I think about the changes in philosophy that he's made no secret about. And I think about when he does leave, and I think that his plans of what he's talking about, I think that he will be able to do so much more for our community. I love how he talked about food insecurity. Like, that is a really big deal in our country, and especially in our community. And I love that he'll be able to do more, because sometimes when you're just in one position, he can only do so much because that's his role. And when he retires and steps away from that, I think that his expertise and what he has seen over the years and his philosophy and how he looks at the world, I think has been powerful and impactful. I am looking forward to what he does outside of office. So good for him.
Okay. So Hannah, you said so many of those things really well. Okay. So apparently we don't have Hannah right now. But I was going to ask her again. There has been a lot of heat on King County Prosecutor, the office, but particularly on Dan Satterberg. Mm-hmm. And there are critics who think that he has gotten soft on crime. And I have made it clear, my husband works for the King County Prosecutor's Office. He works in family law, but technically Dan Satterberg is his boss. And so I have not really, we had Dan on the show at the very beginning of when we first started, but I try to avoid, because of obvious conflict of interest. I haven't made it a secret that my husband works there. But now that he's not going to be running again, I do want to say this. First of all, there is no doubt that he has done a tremendous service. He's been in that office for 30 years. He worked there when Norm Mailing was the prosecutor. He was a Republican and he became a Democrat. But really, that office should not be with any sort of political party attached to it, because it doesn't matter what the political party is. And I just want to say that as much as he's been criticized, especially when it comes to the drug crimes, because as you know, G, you interviewed him when you were doing mm-hmm. Cairo Nights.
Yep.
He had a change of heart on a lot of it because of his own sister.
Sister, yep.
I just say, be careful what you wish for. So much of the criticism that has been leveled at the King County Prosecutor's Office really should have been going to the Seattle City Attorney's Office.
Yeah.
Because so many of the crimes that people say, well, how come that didn't happen? Well, that actually was under the purview of the City Attorney's Office, because it didn't rise to the level of a felony. But in any case, I'm sad to hear this. I think a lot of people in the prosecutor's office probably aren't so surprised. But I will say this. I know, just speaking on behalf of my husband, he has thought that Dan Satterberg has been a great boss.
Well, I had another point that I was going to make, but then Nick came in with this amazing music. So I like to just go ahead and let that take us out. Oh, my goodness. I needed this earlier in the show, Ursula. All right, coming up next, we'll be looking at your texts and we'll respond to that. We'll do that next. This is G and Ursula. Fresh Friday is the G and Ursula Show. Happy Friday. Happy New Year. Hello, Ursula.
Hello, G.
So the 9 o'clock hour was a rough hour, okay?
Yeah.
And then
we just couldn't find reasons to smile. It was just like, oh, man.
And then we made it through. 10 and 11 o'clock was pretty good. So we're going to get to these texts and let's start to prepare. Tough weather conditions and the grocery supply. Our good friend Mariah out there in Gold Bar says, this is why you prepare. It amazes me how dependent people are on the grocery stores when there are options for times like these. We have enough food to last us 3 years alongside all the food we have stored for our animals as well. Call me crazy prepper, but at least I'll have a belly full of food while everyone else panics.
And there is no reason. I know, that's pretty amazing. But you know what? Gold Bar gets hit with some serious weather. And sometimes it's hard to get out. And so, Mariah, you are smart.
I got 3 weeks.
You know what? I have
Oh, I know. I know what you get.
I have some different diet foods from different occasions that if I really start running low, there's First of all, there's no reason. There's no reason to panic buy. Right now, the problem is just especially with the weather, trying to get the trucks in. You don't need to stock up on all the toilet paper that you can find. None of that. That's not what we're dealing with right now. Yeah. I look at this also as an opportunity to try something different. So if they're out of eggs or out of whatever it is, try something different, something they have a lot of that maybe you haven't done before.
Like powder eggs. But go ahead.
Well, okay. When it comes to COVID and the hospital crisis, 253 says a good friend had much needed cancer surgery canceled at Swedish the day before it was scheduled because of the surge at the hospital. It's now going to take at least a month to have it. Those who are not vaccinated impact all of us and are needed medical care.
Catherine says, do you know what else is sad, though, about people taking advice from radio? Many people in the U.S. do not have access to health care provider. They find other ways to try to get educated. It's a little bit of a middle class, upper middle class assumption that people have access to health care. Now, Catherine,
I responded to her because she made a great point.
Wow, that's a great point.
And that is why we're going to do our very best to get the people who actually know these things. And we had Dr. Michelle Terry, a pediatrician, earlier. Mm-hmm. If you missed that conversation, you can check it out on our podcast after the show. Oh, my goodness. We just have too many. I want to say one thing. Mm-hmm. There's one thing that we can all agree on.
What's that?
We want to get to the time where we don't have to talk about COVID ever again. That it does end up being something like just, the flu or whatever it is. We're just not there yet when we're talking about hospitals being full. Okay.
How about you go to election lies and making them a crime? 206 says, how about we make it a crime for politicians to lie, period? Hey, you know what? I say we make it a crime for politicians. People, we media folks, everybody. If you lie, it's a crime. But go ahead.
Lying is too much a part of the social fabric. Hey, I want to read something from Dennis, who sends me emails quite frequently. And he says that bill about Inslee proposing to make it illegal for elected leaders to give false info. He says, the minute an elected official opens his mouth, he is lying, period. Dennis is 79 years old. He's an Air Force veteran. He's a good American, supports police, and hates the Seattle City Council. He wanted me to know all those things. So thank you, Dennis, for sending me your messages frequently, and I do read them.
All right. Words.
I know, we're running out of time. Here's a good one. Life is like a camera. You need to focus on what's important, capture the good times, develop from the negatives, and if things don't work out, take another shot.
Are you trying to talk about me getting married? All right.
Yep. Always look at the bright side.
Ursula, have a great weekend, my friend.
You too. You too. And we'll try to text each other less this weekend, okay?
Matt Butler, thank you, bro.
Thank you. Have a great weekend, G. Appreciate you.
Nick, I just want you to know that Ursula loves you more than I do.
And I love all you guys, but I just want to say, reminded us of the old school Seahawks today, this group right now. We started slow in the first quarter, but we ended strong. And I think that puts in the column as a dub.
I love it. You see why I sent a note to the boss about Nick?
I know. The deuce fire. Hey, thanks, Nick. You're going to keep us young.
Appreciate you, bro.
You're going to keep Ursula doing radio for another 10 years, right, Ursula?
Yes.
I need to ask her about that story. You sang with a famous group.
No. Dory Monson show's coming up next.
Appreciate you for listening. Love you for that. Be good.